Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Carrie is with the law firm of Peck Ritchie. He's an elder law specialist. Is that one way to describe you?
That is. I'm a certified advanced practitioner from the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys in elder law.
I didn't know there was such a thing until I met you, to be honest with you.
Right.
I mean, if I wanted a will or an estate plan, I could go to virtually any attorney for that, right?
Well, you could go to, I'd say, attorneys that do estate planning, yes, but not virtually any lawyer. You know, today the law has become a very specialized area, and I think most lawyers have chosen one or two areas to specialize in so that they're no longer as many generalists as there used to be.
I've discovered that myself, but also not only do you do an estate plan or a will, but you... I don't know if litigator is the right word, but if things have to go into court to be resolved, that's really your area of expertise, right?
It is. Litigation, in fact, is mine and my law firm's area of expertise. We litigate probate cases, trust and estate cases, all of the disputes that relate to mom or dad's money, whether mom or dad can make decisions at this point in their life, and often really ugly family disputes over generally the family money.
Did you see the story a couple of weeks ago? It was kind of a forensic accounting story. A guy in Gage Park, I think it was, passed away. $11 million. No siblings survived, and none of them had children. He never married. He never had kids. They went down five generations of family trees, including to Eastern Europe as well as the Chicago area, and then everybody was going to get around $60,000, all because he didn't leave a will. He could have left it to the Salvation Army or the Humane Society, but it got spread across generations of people across the world who never knew of him.
Yeah, I did see that story, and I think that you really hit it on the head there, John. When you're alive, when you're competent, you have the ability to leave your assets to anyone or any charity you choose. As long as you don't disinherit your spouse, you can write it a will or a trust in any way you see fit.
You can't disinherit your spouse.
You cannot disinherit your spouse.
I just said that like I was thinking about it. I don't want to suggest that at all. I'm surprised to hear that, though. So and it should be that way, right? The spouse should have a stake in your joint assets upon your passing.
Well, not only just your joint assets, but you cannot disinherit your spouse. I mean, at the
what
end of the day...
What about your ex-spouse?
Your ex-spouse, you absolutely can disinherit.
I said that like I was thinking about it, too. And I've only been married once, so forget about that. So your spouse is included. Your ex-spouse, you can write out.
Absolutely. And when you get divorced, in fact, any documents that have your ex-spouse, in general, are effective to eliminate your ex-spouse.
You are chairing a commission that the Supreme Court has put together. What is the purpose of that again?
The purpose of the Illinois Supreme Court Commission on Elder Law is to hear from the public, hear from lawyers, hear from judges, and make recommendations to the Supreme Court on potential changes to the guardianship area, for example, to the ability of lawyers to practice law, for example, elderly lawyers, what's their fitness requirements to practice law, to standardize the qualifications in a guardianship case. The court appoints a guardian ad litem to represent the older adult and generally and to be the eyes and ears of the court. We want to standardize those qualifications. The Supreme Court has basically said, ladies and gentlemen, we want to hear from you, and we want to know about, have you or your family or do you know seniors who have been financially exploited? What can we at the Illinois Supreme Court and the judicial system do to prevent financial exploitation of older adults? And I think that this is a great opportunity for the public to weigh in here on what are going to be proposed changes at some point in the future. So if you want your voice heard, now's the time.
And this isn't you pitching for business, per se. This is you looking for stories of people who feel like they've been abused.
Correct. This is not me pitching for business at all. This, in fact, is the Supreme Court has directed us to gather information, experiential information, experiences of older adults and families who've experienced financial exploitation.
What's an example?
Well, often example is an awful example is a caregiver who goes in, and it's generally a woman who's much younger than the elderly man that she's caring for 24/7. She moves into his house as a caregiver. They spend 24/7 alone. They become romantically involved, and all of a sudden he's signing a deed to the house. He's signing a change to his will and a change to his trust, giving her everything, cutting the family out. That's an extraordinary and common, I'm sorry to say, example of financial exploitation by caregivers.
What rights do the kids have then in that case?
Well, the kids are going to come in and they're going to assert that dad was not competent to make that decision. They're going to assert that the caregiver unduly influenced dad, and they'll have the ability to challenge those decisions, but it's not an easy scenario.
I thought there was a limit on the amount of money that a senior can gift to a caregiver.
There is a very good point. There is a limit, a $20,000 limit post-death. But, of course, these are lifetime gifts.
Oh, post-death, so, right. So, but he can give it all away to her while they're both alive.
Well, in theory, that you know, that hasn't been tested real well yet in the law. But I believe that you know, it's a scenario where the $20,000, there's a presumption of fraud in giving money to a caregiver. The presumption can be overcome.
Really? A presumption of fraud on the caregiver? Really?
Right.
Really? I would imagine that the adult children of this person would be furious, that they would approach the woman and say, hey, dad's not making rational decisions here. You're stealing from him and you're stealing from us. That's how that conversation goes, right?
That is how the conversation goes. That's provided you find the caregiver. I mean, we've been involved in a fair number of cases in which the caregiver makes a big hit at the bank and is on the first plane overseas.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know, it's a tough situation. Okay. And don't forget, financial exploitation, regrettably, comes also in the form of quote-unquote loving family, and in which one child persuades mom or dad that, you know, they are entitled to a greater share than the other children. They took care of mom better than the other children. They had grandchildren for mom and dad. So the reality here is that exploitation comes in a variety of fashions. And often it's for gambling money. It's used for drug money. It's used to buy homes.
Or just life. Sure. I know a case of where one of the siblings had control of the checkbook, was you know, maintaining the finances or some of the details for the parents. When they passed away, rather than splitting it evenly, one-third, 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 this adult child said, well, I'm going to keep half, and you guys can split the other half. And I don't know that she had legal standing to do it, or he had legal standing to do it, but that's what happened. I wonder what advice you would have for people in that situation.
Well, it may have been that individual was a joint tenant on the account. And so that's one of the problems we see on a pretty regular basis. Dad dies and mom puts one of the children as a joint tenant on the account to help her pay her bills and write checks. And when she dies, that joint tenant under the law gets the money. When she's alive, that joint tenant under the law can take all of that money. So that's a scenario that's very common and causes massive disputes amongst families.
And who has legal standing there? The kid with the checkbook, right?
The kid with the checkbook. The other kids can come in and contend that it was an account for convenience purposes, but the kid who's a joint tenant will say it was a gift. And under the law, mom made a gift to me. So, again, it's a piece of litigation that ends up in the courtroom.
Would you advise sometimes it's not worth it? Look, you're fighting over $50,000 here, not $5 million here.
Well, clearly, if the economic costs are more than the potential benefit, then yes, I would advise it's not worth it.
Or if the emotional costs are more than the financial benefit.
Agreed. There's going to be both an economic and emotional cost in every one of these disputes.
We need to take a break, Carrie, but last time you came on, a lot of people called in because they said, well, here's my story. And it's maybe something like we're talking about, or it's some sort of abuse of an elder financially because of the caregiver or the doctor, the care place, whatever. If you've got one of those stories or questions, 312-981-7200. Call right now, 312-981-7200. Carrie Peck is the elder law attorney from Peck Ritchie. He has, in fact, been charged by the Supreme Court in Illinois to reach out to seniors, find out what areas of elder abuse are taking place, financially usually, and then let's craft laws that better protect them or their adult children, because sometimes they're the ones that are missing out on estates or valuations. I'm not going to go into detail now, but in fact, there's a Survey Monkey survey that people can fill out, and you're asking some questions on there, right, Carrie?
We are. We're once again trying to gather information from the public, as the Supreme Court has asked us to particularly gather information from the public about experiences regarding seniors having been defrauded.
So I'm reading some of the questions on the survey. Please share any experiences where an attempt was made to defraud. Basic. And then you just write in your story. Please share any recommendations for judicial branches. Do you have any proposed new rules to give to Illinois attorneys? Please share your recommendations for revisions that could take place. Please share your recommendations for standardization of guardian ad litem. You talked about that a little while ago. Boy, I know people with specific cases that feel that the law did not respect what they were trying to do. And this is a SurveyMonkey survey. I'll tell you more later about how you can fill it in and be part of this process. In fact, you can call right now. Let's talk to Steve. You're on WGN. Steve, what's your question or comment? You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you very much for taking my call. My question is, do you think it's a good idea for the parents to enlighten more to their children what their plans are before they get into a situation where there's private care, or is that even an option?
What do you mean, more specifically?
Well, I mean, should they enlighten basically their children that the way they want things split up before anything else gets into their latter years of their life, so yeah, that any kind of situation that does arise, these were their first intentions for the best of their children.
What do you think about that, Carrie?
Well, I think that, fundamentally, let's not forget, oral statements for your parents that, how they want to split up the money doesn't mean a thing. And so at the end,
how about post-it notes on things?
Yeah, post-it notes mean even less. So at the end of the day, if your parents don't put it in writing with a lawyer in a will and or a trust, all of their comments, he said, she said, they said, in a courtroom will mean absolutely nothing.
True. That's exactly what we did. We put it all into a trust, basically for the benefit of the estate tax. This is the way that we thought was the best to benefit.
Oh, an estate tax. Are you a farmer? Do you own a?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. And it was extremely hard for them to quit claim deed a lot of the property away to us children, because they've worked their whole life to save up for what they have. And now they put it into a trust, and they actually have no claim to it anymore.
What do you
comment on? Well, I think that, there are legitimate means to avoid, it sounds like, the Illinois inheritance tax. And I think that you need to consult a good lawyer to do that. Sounds like perhaps you've done that. The Illinois inheritance tax, is very, very substantial. People need to plan for it.
Good luck to you, Steve. It sounds like you've done the right thing. Thanks for the call. I'm going to go to Colleen next. You're on WGN. Hi, Colleen.
Hi, how are you?
What's your story?
So my question is not about financial. I have a 97-year-old grandfather that is in a memory care facility out in Indiana. Last time I went to visit him, he is not being properly taken care of, and I'm talking about toenails growing over his toes,
yeah,
soiled sheets. I reached out to the POA, who ignored me. I reached out to the home, who told me that in order for these things to be taken care of, the POA needs to request them.
POA stands for power of attorney, or what is that? POA.
Yes, yes. So what kind of recourse do I have?
Who is the POA?
An older sister of mine.
What about this?
So, Colleen, you know, I don't know what the law is in Indiana. I'm licensed in Illinois and Florida. But in Illinois, if this were the situation, I would encourage you to consider filing a petition for guardianship, seeking to ask that the court revoke the power of attorney of your sister because she's not properly caring for your grandfather. And obviously the instances that you've laid out, whether it's toenails or soiled sheets, you're going to need more, I can tell you that. But potentially the court would revoke the power of attorney, take it away from her, and you would seek your nomination of yourself as guardian.
Okay. And then what
is
she
do? And what is that called again?
A guardianship case. You need a lawyer licensed in Indiana to do it in Indiana.
Maybe you can help her find somebody like that. But here's my question. So now, say she has the power of attorney. Then she's not going to change the sheets. Now she's got to get the home where he's staying to change the sheets, right?
If she's appointed guardian in a guardianship case after the power of attorney is taken away, you're going to have to either tell the home, do your job well, or we're moving grandpa.
Yeah, right. I mean, do you sue that place?
Well, there are many lawsuits against nursing homes. Usually it's for substantial injuries, perhaps falls in which people break hips.
Crappy care like this wouldn't be something I could say, hey, you need to compensate us in some way?
Regrettably, you know, I don't think that this rises to the level that we need some compensation. But you certainly can say, I'm going to move them. And they want to keep those beds filled for obvious reasons.
Yeah, maybe that'll motivate them. I'm sorry to hear that, Colleen. Good luck to you, and I'll give the phone number for Carrie's business here. But I also want you to, if you are a person who wanted to participate in this survey, if you wanted to actually tell the state of Illinois, here's how we need to protect seniors, then you should do that as well. How should people reach out to you?
Well, they can call me at area code 312-201-0900, and that's my office phone.
312-201-0900. PeckRitchie.com is their website. And elder law attorney Carrie Peck visits with us once in a while. It's always amazing the stuff you tell us, Carrie. I'm glad you joined us again today.
Thanks for having me, John.